Hello, everyone.
It is April 30th.
And it's the last day.
Yeah, it's definitely the last
day. We started already?
Yes, we started.
The last day's already started without you, Amanda.
Well, that's par for the course, dear friends. Yep. Par for the course. What's the name of this podcast? Why? It's the Born on This Day podcast.
And today is the very last day because, of course, we started on May 1st last year. And now it's hard to say goodbye, my love. It's hard to see you cry, my love. Hard to open up that door when you're not sure what you're going for.
Never say goodbye. little JBJ? No. Say goodbye, yeah.
There's no Remember greater that? Power than the power of goodbye.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's good. That's Madonna.
Yep.
That's a good song.
Was it Ray of Light?
Yep.
Yeah,
Warren Vizhnyk in the video. Yep.
Yeah.
Your heart is not open, so I must go. Spell has been broken.
Shield.
I love you so. Yeah, great.
I also want to mention. I want to mention that we raised $50 from our podcast
for Marfan Syndrome.
Yep, for Marfan Syndrome. We haven't talked about Marfans in a long while.
We haven't talked about Marfans, but I determine, as someone who has Marfandar, I'm going to determine that everybody on this list has Marfans.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't say Daniel Day-Lewis has Marfans, because
I don't think of him enough to think about it.
But would you say he has?
Possibly, yeah. He might, yeah.
So we thought this podcast up before quarantine began, but of course we were well into quarantine by the time we finally got it started, which means that for this entire year, I have had the pleasure of, you know, keeping in touch with you guys every week, which has been really, really nice, you know, because we're all very isolated. I mean, you two are married, so you definitely don't communicate or touch each other at all, but I particularly have been isolated here with the old folks, and it's been a real pleasure. To, you know, this show has been hard work for all of us. Marco, you're constantly editing. I was constantly writing. Amanda was constantly judging. And
that's what I did. I just judged. Yeah, that's pretty true.
We worked very hard, but I had a really great time with you guys, and I'm really glad that we did this. It was a really nice thing to do during this very tumultuous year, you know.
Thank you.
I loved tucking into a good 5 hours with Bill get through it.
And yet Bill and I could do the same thing an hour and a half.
I know. It's true. Yeah. I remember Marco, when you asked me a year ago if I want to do this, and I was like, I don't know what you mean, but sure. I said.
I think you said, if it involves Bill, I'm in, is what you said.
Yeah. And I've learned a lot, actually. I've learned a lot about
And you've
people.
Forgotten just as much.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Like most of it, very gone. Most of it did not get retained.
On the one hand, I'm like, oh my God, you know, it was so much work that I'm like, oh, thank God it's over. We don't have to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. But I also am like, oh, but we have to find something. It's kind of like when Brian and Stewie were glued at the hand on Family Guy. And then once they finally got separated, then they decided to hold hands all the way home because they missed each other. So that's how
you don't know how to do it. Or like Shawshank Redemption when, you know, they'd get out of prison and then they wouldn't know to do with themselves.
I do a lot of this. We'll watch television. I'll be like, oh, it was his birthday last week.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy. It's that person's birthday. I remember Bill saying, or then we'll talk about shows and I'll be like, I got to ask Bill. He'll know.
We should do this, like a once a month thing.
Yeah. Like
that feels more manageable.
That Mayor Winningham show. What's it called?
Oh my gosh. It's called Mayor of East Town. Yeah, it's not Mayor Winningham.
Starring Mayor Winningham as yet another unhappy mother.
I never know how to, because my remote, you can talk into it and it'll call the channel.
Uh-huh.
So I'm constantly screaming things in the channel to get it.
He's like, Mayor, me, oh yeah.
I'm always screaming, Mayor Winningham, and all her people.
Witches of Eastwick usually comes up. I
yell, Mayor of Eastwick. So Witches of Eastwick.
It's not like Mayor of Eastwick. It's not Eastwick.
I'm like, Lady Hawk. Isn't it called Lady Hawk?
Yeah, those talking remotes are not made for you, Marco.
No.
They're not made for you at all. Anyway.
Well, there are people born on this day, so I guess we need to get to the task at hand.
Yes.
But I do want to just say thank you, both of you, for doing the lion's share bulk of the work. Because really, all I did was show up and complain. And I at certain point said, I'm going to start doing more work. And then I never did.
Hmm. You set up a schedule and then you fucked
and then
off.
And then I left off. Well, I said, let's put it on a Google Drive. And then, that's it. That's all I did.
Well, but we had it covered. If we needed more from you, we would have asked for it.
Well, the, in the next life.
Also, you were just the girl and that should be enough. Okay.
It's, yes, exactly. I lent the pretty and I lent the vag. So that's what I've lent. That's what I've lent to the show. Yes. I'm going to read you the horoscope here. Okay. I mean, I'm going to.
Today's born on this day is what we'll call it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So today is, sorry, I told you I would do that. Even that, I dropped the ball. Wow. I said, you know, we should make this. I deleted the day that it was, which was Prayerathon Day, and said, no, I determined that April 30th from here on in is the Born on This Day day, a day where we celebrate all things born on this day, i.e. all things this podcast, all things the three of us.
Celebrities you love.
I said this yesterday, but I'm going to say it again. You know, we started this a year ago, very unsure of where the pandemic would take us. Some of us thought the pandemic would be over at that point because we thought it would be a 2-week or 3-week haul. Here we are a year later, but at least we all have our first vaccination shot.
It's true. Yes.
And the fact that we all live in Toronto, in the city of Toronto, and we all have a vaccination shot on April 30th, 2021 is no small feat. Some people are listening going, that's fine. I got mine months ago. Sure. Well, not us. And so it, for us, it's a real light at the end of the tunnel moment. So I just want to say that.
And I also, because today's born on this day, I want to thank our listeners in the US, our listeners in Canada, our listeners in Ireland, our listeners in Australia, and our listeners in the UK.
And especially those who left us reviews. We really appreciated it. They were lovely. Mm-hmm. And
also Taiwan, Germany.
Yep. Hi to Lucy.
Oh, yes.
Lucy,
our super fan. Yeah. Well, if you are born on this day, again, happy birthday if it's April 30th. We spent a long time talking about ourselves, so sorry, and you're welcome. But anyway, if you're born today, you benefit from being dependable and faithful. And they usually find, people born on this day, the stability and security they need from those around. Just like the truest of Tauruses, you are practical, you are generous, you are full of good intentions. You love owning many precious things and staying in your comfortable, happy place.
Yay.
And hopefully that involves this podcast.
Celebrating a birthday today, Ana de Armas recently made headlines for her leading performance in the mystery film Knives Out, for which she was nominated for a Golden Globe Award. The Cuban-born actress's career goes back to her film debut in the Spanish film Virgin Rose in 2006, starring on the shows El Internado and Hispania la Leyenda. She crossed over to American cinema with Todd Phillips's War Dogs in 2016, then had a key role as a hologram in Blade Runner 2049, and appeared in the musical fantasy Yesterday. In 2019, she had a key role in Olivier Assayas's Wasp Network. She was born on this day in Havana, Cuba in 1988.
I like that key role. I've had a key role in a lot of things. We don't have to worry about supporting guest star. Key role. I have a key role. Well, she's had a key role in the superhero universe for a while now. Gal Gadot came out of nowhere when she made her film debut in Fast and Furious in 2009. Her film debut, of course, after years as a highly successful model. She served in the Israeli army for 2 years. She won the Miss Israel title in 2004. Then after two more Fast and Furious films and the Tom Cruise film Night and Day, she landed the role of Wonder Woman. First in Batman 5, Batman versus Superman. Shows you how much I follow all of the superhero stuff. In 2006, I was like, oh, there's a Batman 5. Okay, that's nice. Like Henry V. Anyway, and then in her own hit film, 2017. This past year, she starred in the film's underwhelming sequel. Yes, it sure was. And will soon be seen in the Kenneth Branagh adaptation of Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile, whose release has been delayed by COVID. We eagerly await it.
Mm-hmm. French and Saunders are in it.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I love them. Yeah. I actually have started watching Ab Fab.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the things this podcast has finally, it's been a lifelong dream to actually be a person who actually watches Absolutely Fabulous. Yeah. And
Our job is done. This was the whole purpose of this podcast.
I do absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. Anyway, in 2020, she made headlines when her video project meant to speak to anxieties about the COVID-19 pandemic had various celebrities singing John Lennon's Imagine, but it drew criticism for the fact that the participants were filming their segments in their mansions and in their summer homes. It's very true. She was born on this day in Rosh Hashanah, Israel in 1985. I think I did that justice. us.
You did. You definitely did. That's why there's another war happening over there right now.
Listen, no one loves Israel more than me, except probably a lot of people, but I did except a lot of people, but I have to say I do love Israel and I'd love to go back.
It's well, and I love her and her last name is pronounced Gadot, by the way, just so you know.
I thought that's what I said. What did I say?
Gadot.
Most people say Gadot like it's French, but it's Gadot.
Right. Gail Gadot.
I didn't think I'd love anyone more than Linda Carter in the role of Wonder Woman. And she's fantastic.
Yeah. She's super hot too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Anyways, love him or hate him,
yeah.
Sam Heughan has become a star thanks to his performance as Jamie Fraser on the popular Netflix romance series Outlander, which he is currently in its fifth season. His success has come more than a decade after his debut in the miniseries Island at War, after which he appeared on episodes of Midsummer Murders, which you made fun of the other night, Amanda, remember?
Yeah.
Yep. The Wild West, and co-starred on the show's Doctors. Do you remember there was a movie called Young Doctors in Love?
Yes.
Back in the early 80s, and it was always on the pay channel, and I wasn't allowed to watch it because it was supposedly
dirty. Well, we'll watch it the night that we watch Butterflies Are Free, and they shoot horses, don't they?
Yep. Okay, anyways, he was also in the miniseries A Very British Sex Scandal. In 2003, he was nominated for an Olivier Award for Most Promising Newcomer in the play Outlying Islands and the Royal Court Theatre. In 2018, he co-starred in the comedy The Spy Who Dumped Me, and last year appeared in Bloodshot with Vin Diesel. He was born on this day in New Galway, Scotland in 1980.
I can't believe Outlander has been on for 5 seasons. Yeah. How many moms are there out there?
A lot.
So many. Because I started watching that show, and I kind of got sick of it after a few episodes, but I was like, this couldn't possibly have the stamina to last more than like 8, like I couldn't imagine the concept lasting beyond 8 episodes or so, and it's still going. She's still lost in ancient Scotland.
Listen, Danielle Steele had a career. Do not, if there's one thing I've learned in my personal and professional life, do not estimate the buying power.
I know.
Of middle-aged white women. I know.
But honestly, none of them watch that show and they're like, how come? Like, what does she do about tampons now? Like, that's what I think of when I watch her on that show.
Oh, they don't.
Moss.
I will say, though, Sam is very attractive. The nicest tits in all of show business on that man, I will say. Yeah.
Wow.
The nicest. And sorry, Natalie Wood, but yeah. All right. Kirsten Dunst started acting at the age of 7, playing Mia Farrow's daughter in the Woody Allen segment of New York Stories, and had appeared in 4 films and 6 television episodes by the time she made headlines at the age of 12, when she was cast in the pivotal role of Claudia in the highly anticipated adaptation of Anne Rice's Interview with a Vampire with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Earning a Golden Globe nomination for her portrayal of an adult woman trapped in a child's body, she quickly followed it with roles in Little Women, Jumanji, Wag the Dog, and Small Soldiers. Further acclaim came with Sofia Coppola's The Virgin Suicides, Bring It On, The Cat's Meow, and Mona Lisa Smile. Then in 2002, she joined the superhero universe as Mary Jane in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. In 2011, she won Best Actress at the Cannes Film Festival for her most celebrated performance in Lars von Trier's Melancholia. She reunited with Coppola for Marie Antoinette and The Beguiled. In 2016, had a supporting role in the Oscar-nominated Hidden Figures and earned further Golden Globe nominations for the shows Fargo and On Becoming a God in Central Florida. She was born on this day in Point Pleasant, New Jersey in 1982.
Marco, do you know which one she is?
Kirsten Dunst as a child.
Yes. I think I explained that to Bill once, that there's about 5 actresses that Marco says, which one is that? And it'll be Kirsten Dunst as a child, Kirsten Dunst as a dancer, Kirsten Dunst, because it's a bunch of blondish actresses. Kirsten Dunst with an Adam's apple.
Yeah.
Kirsten Dunst. Yeah. Just all the Kirsten Dunst in the world.
She's
the best of them,
though. She's really
good. Yeah, I like her.
So he calls her Kirsten Dunst as a child because he's like, which one was an Interview with the Vampire?
And she'll say Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst.
And which one's the dancer? And you'll be like,
that's,
and I know she had a
Julia Stiles.
Julia Stiles.
She had a rough patch for a while there, too. I know she was in rehab at one point, and it's like, how could you not be with the schedule you've had since you were 7 years old?
Yeah.
When you look at her resume, you know, she's just worn out, that poor thing. But she's bounced back, and her performances are even stronger and more complex now than when she was a kid. So
Good. She's a great actor. Usually people who are good actors as kids, it's in there still if they can re-find it, you know?
And she's married to the absolute ugliest man in the world, so she'll always feel good about herself no matter
what. That's a good sign. Yeah, that's a good sign. Builds character for those pretty girls. Yeah. Well, anyway, speaking of ugly men and Lars von Trier, the Danish filmmaker also, I really buried the lead. I thought it was like, speaking of Lars von Trier, this rando from Denmark but I didn't realize it was Lars von Trier himself. So let's take it back, folks. Lars von Trier, who we were just talking about in relation to Kirsten Dunst, also celebrates a birthday today. His career goes back to making short films when he was a preteen, but he gained notice as a professional back in 1984 with the film The Element of Crime, followed by his highly acclaimed 1991 film Europa, aka Zentropa. He broke through internationally when his 1996 film Breaking the Waves won second place at the Cannes Film Festival and was one of the decade's most acclaimed films. His follow-up, The Idiots, was a critical and commercial failure, but in 2000, he won the Palme d'Or at Cannes with, you know it, Dancer in the Dark, starring my hero, Bjork, who later said,
I've seen it all. I have seen the trees. I have seen the willow leaves dancing in the breeze.
Thank you. I just don't
mountain and again.
It's like only for me that you're seeing that thing. Nobody knows the movie that well. But the thing that I would love to see you do a one man Dancer in the Dark where you play
amazing. All of them, Catherine Deneuve and Bjork.
Joel Grey. Bjork, all of the things. Anyway, Bjork did say that she found von Trier's behavior to be abusive and disrespectful.
Oh, no.
She played a very Bjorky character. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. He followed that with Dogville, Manderley, Antichrist. And during the 2011 Cannes Film Festival, while premiering Melancholia, got himself kicked out of the festival for his off-color remarks about Nazis.
Jesus.
I mean... Okay. His 2013 film, I'd like to know what those remarks were. Like, was he for or against?
He was trying to be funny. I've actually listened to the entire press conference because Cannes used to actually load them up as MP3s on their website and they don't anymore. And for nerds like me, it was a very sad day, I will tell you, when they stopped doing it. But anyway, so I listened to the whole press conference because, of course, after a film or before a film, after a press screening, there's always like the 1 hour table conference with like all the actors and directors. And this all happened actually in the last like 10 minutes of the thing where he made a joke. He said something about Nazis. He's like, oh, actually, my mother was a Nazi. No, just kidding. My grandmother was a Nazi. And he's a very talented guy. He's also a complete jackass whose parents made him feel like all of his feelings matter. So if he tells a joke and people don't laugh, it ruins his world. And so because no one was laughing at his dumb joke, he just kept digging it deeper. You know, when you do that thing where you're just trying harder to dig for the laugh and you make it worse. Yeah. And so he just kept going further and further. You can tell he wasn't thinking about what he was saying, but that he was just being dumb. And it got to the point. So he never actually said anything that appalled me, but he was so foolish that it's like, kick him out, you know, just kick him out.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Oh, that's too bad. Well, after that little incident, his 2013 film Nymphomaniac was released in two parts, and his latest film was the 2018 The House That Jack Built, starring Matt Dillon. That's where he's been. He was born on this day in Copenhagen in 1956.
Well, the Danes aren't known for their comedies, so maybe he should just relax a little bit there.
Yeah.
Well, they just
After Dancer in the Dark came out, Bjork said she never wanted to make another movie again. Because she said, why should I go to the set every day and just cry all day? That's not fun. And I'm like, well, not all movies are like that.
Yeah, I don't know that is a weird first movie.
But she apparently stormed off the set quite a lot because she didn't like how he was editing her music. Because, of course, she writes everything in the movie, but he's the director. So he gets to decide, you know, what to do with it. And she didn't like that at all. And then it was post Me Too that she also said that there was a lot of unnecessary hugging from him that made her very like uncomfortable and stuff.
So, Yeah. Well, there's a lot of that's a power move for men and women.
Sure.
Certainly directors dealt with that a whole bunch. but how did he know how did she know how he was editing it? Because how
question.
They were
I don't know.
It?
I don't
that's
know.
That's interesting.
It's Bjork. Yeah. She knows everything.
That's true. She's.
I mean, if you listen to her album Selma Songs, that's her version of the songs in that movie.
Yeah.
And there's only like, they're pretty much the same, except one song's a bit, a bit longer. Like the 100 and something steps song was originally like 140. Mm-hmm. And I think she was pissed off that he cut it down to like,
I had the album, I had the movie, but I have to say, I think I've only watched the movie once, maybe twice.
It's not one you can easily rewatch. It's a lot to go through.
It's our friend Dale and Trevor's. It was their first date.
Oh, Jesus.
It was their first date was that movie.
You know, the first time you watch it, it's devastating. And then when you watch it again, you can see where all the strings are pulling things and engineering manipulative situations. And it doesn't work after you've seen it the first time.
I didn't care for it even the first time I saw it. I found it very schlocky the first time I saw it.
And it is intentionally so, but
Yeah. Anyway, and I also was watching it with a different lens, I think, because I was
most of his films are usually about like a vulnerable woman who is basically destroyed by a society that can't bend its rules to accommodate her. That seems to be how he expresses his own emotional fragility, but he does it a billion times better in Breaking the Waves than he does in Dancer in the Dark.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Anyway.
Sort of manic.
All right. Pixie. Well, next on my list is one of my favorite, if not my favorite. It's been just 3 months since we lost the legendary Cloris Leachman, who died at the tender age of 94. After a remarkable career on stage, television, and in film. She majored in drama at Northwestern University and won the title of Miss Chicago in 1946 before leaving the Des Moines Playhouse to head to New York and break into television. Working steadily through the 50s, she began to get noticed in films like Kiss Me Deadly and The Rack, and on the television shows Lassie, Hawaiian Eye, and The Twilight Zone. After roles in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and Lovers and Other Strangers, she achieved fame in the 70s with her role in the film The Last Picture Show, for which she won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress and for playing Phyllis on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, for which she won one of her eight Emmy Awards.
Wow.
And which she later spun off into its own series. Phyllis, right? I don't remember too much about that series, Phyllis, but
it was all the Mary Tyler Moore spinoffs were successful to varying degrees. That one was one of the shorter ones, but it did last for a good amount of time. And then there was Rhoda and Lou Grant as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, in 1986, she took over for Charlotte Ray on the last seasons of The Facts of Life, starred in the film version of The Beverly Hillbillies, and had roles in Music of the Heart, Alex and Emma, and Spanglish, for which she was nominated for a Golden Globe. Never one to stop working, she was consistently in front of cameras until the end, most recently on the reboot of Mad About You, and still has two films not yet released. She was born on this day in Des Moines, Iowa, in 1926.
Are they going to come out? Maybe.
Yeah, they will. I think, they're just in post-production.
Oh. What a life.
Her resume is insane. And it's amazing too, because like, I know how old she was when she died, but it still blows my mind when I think, oh, she was in things like Kiss Me Deadly. Cause she always seemed so modern to me. And she always had a youthful spirit, even in her 90s, that it's like, oh, she goes all the way back to those movies, you know, like these, and shows like The Twilight Zone. It's like, how could she have been on those? It's like, oh, because she was old, you know, she did have a long career and started getting successful quite young. She was also, of course, in the Mel Brooks films. I forgot to mention Young Frankenstein.
Oh, she was so great
to go into her career. Yeah.
Do you remember she wanted to be in the play, the Broadway play Young Frankenstein, and they said she was too old.
Yeah.
And she's like, but I can do it. And they wouldn't hire her for it. And so what she did was she went on Dancing with the Stars to prove that she could do it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And she was doing splits and everything else. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
She was a hardy lady. She was great. Mm-hmm. I always felt like I knew her. She was one of those performers where you felt like you knew her.
Totally.
Yeah.
Johnny Galecki began acting at the age of 6, working in Chicago theater in shows like Fiddler on the Roof and The Member of the Wedding. Then he entered television at the age of 12. He became famous 5 years later when he joined the cast of Roseanne as David, Darlene's boyfriend, and eventually the Connors' adopted son. He had roles in The Opposite of Sex, Suicide Kings, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. Then in 2006, became part of one of the most successful recent sitcoms when The Big Bang Theory premiered to critical and audience popularity and stayed on the air for 12 seasons, its cast members becoming the highest paid entertainers on television. What were they getting by the end? Like over $1 million per episode?
I don't know. I'll look it up.
Yeah. In 2012, he was nominated for a Golden Globe Award for the show. In 2019, he was in the film A Dog's Journey. And recently, he revived his role of David on The Connors. He was born on this day in Brie, Belgium in 1975.
I always forget that he was that guy in the Connors.
Yeah.
Like, it makes complete sense, but I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh, I always knew
so
him
the
as
core
David.
The core cast of five, which is himself, Jim Parsons, mm-hmm. Kaley Cuoco, Kunal Nayar, and Simon Helberg, all banded together to renegotiate equal salaries in 2015, much like Friends did. And mm-hmm. so they earned $1 million per episode. But isn't that what Friends earned? I thought Friends earned $1 million per episode.
I think towards the latter part of the
Yeah, so they basically they pulled the Friends. Yeah.
Oh. And even though Friends, the you know, I know that inflation has occurred since Friends, I would still happily take $1 million per episode.
Yeah, well, for sure. But I think that Friends is so noteworthy because they really did believe in ensemble, and they really were an ensemble. And I, you know, in my own small little life, I had a cast that did exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Where, and I kept saying, guys, we need to. The only way that all of us get is if we all band together.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand there are shows where there is one draw and then everyone else is a supporting character.
Totally.
But on Friends, there's no question that they were all,
that
the writers favored them all equally. And, you know, because they had ABC stories on those episodes and that you couldn't pull one away without exactly. ruining the whole. I mean, that's when you saw the Joey spinoff, you realized that like none of them could exist without the rest of them. So,
Absolutely. Well, speaking of Big Bang Theory, Galecki's co-star, which we just named Kunal Nayar, also celebrates a birthday today. He, of course, played Raj Kuptrali on the series in its entire 12-season run, his first on-screen acting role after his debut in the film Science in 2004. He had moved to the States when he was 18, performing in theater, taking acting classes, earning a business degree in Portland, later getting a master's in fine arts at Temple University in Philadelphia. He's also performed voices in Ice Age, Continental Drift, and the Trolls films. I mean, who isn't in Trolls, really? And in 2014, starred in the film Dr. Cabby, and we
he
have a dear
that.
Friend
right.
in Dr. Cabby, don't we?
Was it Marco's- shot here?
Marco's podcast Eat and Drink co-star was
Ali in it?
I don't know if Ali
was in it.
I'm not sure.
Oh, he's worked with the team before, maybe.
Perhaps, yeah.
Mm. Oh, gosh. Okay, well, now I feel like an idiot that I really thought there was a connection.
Maybe he was. I don't know.
Well, in any event, we do have a friend that worked with that
I'm just going to run up to Ali and say, oh, my God, I loved you in Dr. Cabby, just to see if I get kicked out.
Please do. Please do. Yeah, anyway, he will soon be on the series Suspicion. We'll see him in that. And he was raised in New Delhi, but he was born on this day in London, England in 1981.
Wow. Adrian Pasdar was being prepped for a role as a young leading man in the 80s with his roles in Top Gun and Streets of Gold. Later was in Near Dark by Catherine Bigelow and Cookie by Susan Seidelman. Thank you. He originally intended to pursue a career in football until an accident badly injured his face and legs. And yet he was still a leading man.
He was really hot when he was young.
Even after the face accident, I guess. Eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he pull an Anne Margaret? It was Anne Margaret's birthday yesterday.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah. Her face too. Anyways, after the accident, he began working as a crewman with a theater company until he cut off part of his thumb, in a construction accident. He used the compensation to pay to study at the Lee Strasberg Institute, after which his career began.
But then his leg got cut off. It's like this poor, every time, it's like by the time he gets famous, he's only like a stump.
He appeared in Brian De Palma's Carlito's Way and was on the show's Feds and Judging Amy, which I think your mother liked Judging Amy, right?
Of course. She
it's did. A mom show.
Stardom didn't quite work out, but he achieved a higher profile later with his role on Heroes as the voice of Iron Man on the Marvel animated series and roles on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Colony. He most recently was on the series Grand Hotel and in real life made headlines with his high profile divorce from the Dixie Chicks singer Natalie Maines. He was born on this day in Pittsfield, Massachusetts in 1965.
Good old Pittsfield.
I think the song Gaslighter is the song she wrote about him. So I have
I was
a feeling,
say.
I have a feeling it didn't end well.
And it's very much like, it's like the story. If you listen to that story, it's like, we started out this and then we went this and you said this. And then the next year we did this. Like, it's very specific.
Well, and they were together for a long time and they had kids and everything. Like, he was married to her when the George Bush controversy happened with they're now called just the Chicks, they're not the Dixie Chicks, but
right
like they were married for a long time.
Wow.
And he's still a very good actor, but he was very attractive when he was young. Anyway, who wasn't?
Most gaslighters are.
Yeah. That's how they draw you in. All right, Marco. Marco, you know the movie Rocky pretty well, I think.
Yes, all right. Italian. Of course I do.
Burt Young is best known for his Oscar-nominated performance as Polly in Rocky, which he followed with appearances in many of the film's sequels. I just need to take a break from the script to point out that he was 36 when he played Polly in the first Rocky movie.
Wow. Jesus.
And I'm going to, when I read that, I almost died. I couldn't believe it. Because I'm amazed that he's still alive. And I'm like, how's that possible? Because he was 104 when he made that movie, but he wasn't. He was 36. Anyway, another graduate of Lee Strasberg Actors Studio, he made his film debut 6 years before Rocky in the horror film Carnival of Blood. Later had notable roles in Chinatown, The Killer Elite, Convoy, and Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America. He has worked consistently since, appearing in She's So Lovely, Mickey Blue Eyes with Hugh Grant, Transamerica, and in this year's Charlie Boy. He was born on this day in New York City in 1940.
Well, Jill Clayburgh followed her Broadway appearances in The Rothschilds and Pippin, one of Marco's favorites, with her most famous roles in the 70s, first with Portnoy's Complaint and The Thief Who Came to Dinner, later The Terminal Man, Gable and Lombard, and the comedy Silver Streak with Gene Wilder and Semi-Tough with Burt Reynolds. In 1978, she won Best Actress at Cannes for her masterpiece performance in Paul Mazursky's An Unmarried Woman, for which she was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress. She was nominated again just a year later for Starting Over and later appeared in First Monday in October, Hannah Kay, and Shy People. Fame eluded her in the 90s, but she continued to make appearances, having late life success in the film Running with Scissors and the series Dirty Sexy Money. In 2011, she made her final appearance as Annie's mom in the mega hit comedy Bridesmaids, which was released a year after she passed away at the age of 66. Oh, she wasn't that old.
No.
She was married to Hurley Burley author David Rabe and was the mother of American Horror Story actress Lily Rabe. Ah, now I know who that is. She was born on this day in New York City in 1944.
Great.
She has a granddaughter. She has a granddaughter called Broccoli Rabe.
No, she doesn't.
Okay.
Thank you for that, though. Thank you for that.
Eve Arden was one of the most beloved character actresses of the 50s and 60s, Amanda and Bill. Best known for her role in as Our Miss Brooks on the radio show. Who could forget that, Christ?
Oh, it's still a great show. I listen to that radio show all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah, it's fantastic. You can get it on a podcast.
Wow. Well, she was on the television series and even one of 1956 film adaptations of Our Miss Brooks. She had quit school to join a stock company when she was 16 and began acting in the movies in the 30s, including in At the Circus with the Marx Brothers, before earning an Oscar nomination for the Joan Crawford classic Mildred Pierce. Then in the 50s, she starred on The Eve Arden Show, as well as a key role in Otto Preminger's Anatomy of a Murder. Later roles included The Red Skeleton Show, The Mother-in-Laws, and as Principal McGee in the film Grease. Oh, her. She's great. Yeah. I love her. Yeah. Which she reprised in the 1980s.
We read all of these ahead of time. Remember when that was like a thing we were trying to do?
She reprised the role as the principal in the 1982 sequel with, of course, Michelle Pfeiffer in it.
Yeah.
Her last appearance was on, thank Christ, it happened on our last show, Falcon Crest in 1987.
Yay! This is where we all drink.
That's right. 3 years before her death at the age of 82. She was born on this day in Mill Valley, California in 1908.
Yeah. One of the greats. I love Eve Arden.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah. So bringing it closer to home, guys, Canadian actor Paul Gross has had a successful career on both sides of the border, most notably for the series Due South, whose four seasons in the late 90s were even more popular in the States than they were in Canada. A child of a Canadian Army tank commander whose family moved around the world a lot as a child, he first gained notice in the miniseries Chasing Rainbows before roles in Married to It, Whale Music, and the first Tales of the City miniseries. Later, he was on The Red Green Show and the film Will Be Wonderful. He made his directorial debut with the comedy Men with Brooms, then in 2008, achieved his dream of bringing the war film Passchendaele to the screen, based on the experiences of his own grandfather in World War I. It was the most expensive movie ever produced in Canada and won 6 Genie Awards, including a Best Picture Prize for Paul Gross. And despite the fact that no one in Canada saw it, except for my sister, because she's a history teacher and took her students to see it, but had to go see it first to make sure it was okay for her students to see, and then took three different classes to see it, and then bought the DVD and shows it her class. And no one has seen that movie except my sister has watched it 100 times.
You've seen it?
I've seen it once. She's doing the Lord's work for all of us, though.
I guess.
Is it good?
It's okay. It has very good battle scenes. The money is on the screen, but the relationship scenes are woefully underwritten. And no offense to Paul Gross, but he's too old for the role by the time he gets around to finally making this movie.
Right.
You know, he's so handsome and he's very talented, but
sure.
It just, yeah. I don't know, it doesn't fire on all cylinders, that movie. In 2009, he starred on the show Eastwick. He was a regular guest on Republic of Doyle. And in 2011, co-starred with Kim Cattrall on stage in Noel Coward's Private Lives. He returned to directing.
Which our dear friend was the understudy for.
Oh, that's cool.
Who was?
Christy Bruce was Kim Cattrall's understudy on Broadway. Awesome. Yeah.
Did she ever go on?
I think she did. And she also played our nephew's mother, is playing our nephew's mother in a movie coming up. With another famous person that I can't name.
Mm. He returned to directing in 2015 with Hyena Road. Most recently, he was in the miniseries Alias Grace and returned to Tales of the City in 2019. He was born on this day in Calgary, Alberta in 1959. And the thing that makes me laugh most about Paul Gross is that every time he's in anything, people always say to me, oh, you know, he's really up and coming. America's going to take notice of him soon. He's going to be a star. And they're still saying it. He's 60 years old. I think he's fine with his lot in life. But people still say that, in the same way that my whole life, people have always been saying, you know, Canadian movies are starting to be noticed. We're on our way up. And it's like, it's been 45 years. Maybe this is as good as it gets.
I've heard things said about Paul Gross, but I've never heard that. not in my lifetime. I'm sure I haven't lived in Toronto long enough to have heard that, I guess. Anyway, Perry King has been the most handsome man in show business since his debut in Slaughterhouse-Five in 1972, after which he played roles in The Lords of Flatbush, The Wild Party, Lipstick, and A Different Story. He graduated from Yale University with a theater degree before attending Juilliard, where he studied under John Houseman. Movie stardom led to television success in the 1980s, appearing on The Quest, Riptide, and numerous TV movies. Plus, he had a leading role in the Canadian horror classic Class of 84. Roles continued in the 90s as he aged into a silver fox. I have to say, I have no idea who this is.
I was like, I didn't know you liked Perry King.
So handsome. He's so handsome.
Why who writes all of our copy?
He could have played, if you want to picture him, he could have played like the young uncle to the actor who played the grandson on Mama's Family.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, he's a good looking older man. He looks kind of like...
What was Riptide about? I always remember it being on TV. I mean,
yeah.
I always remember Riptide on when I was... a teen, but I don't remember what it was about. It was about three men.
He looks kind of like that Danish filmmaker that just won for that drunk movie. Anyway, where am I with this? I've lost Switch. Him. Anyway, Switch. Okay. Yes. And he also did a season of Melrose. Let's not forget that. He also had small parts in films The Day After Tomorrow and Hatfields and McCoys. He's actually a descendant of Edward I, King of England, Roger Sherman, signer of the Declaration of Independence. That's an interesting factoid. How'd you find that out? That's interesting.
I looked it up, Amanda. I don't actually write these off the top of my head.
I don't believe it. He was born in this day in Alliance, Ohio in 1948.
Is he still attractive, Bill?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's just, and when he was young, he was so, so beautiful. A gorgeous physique and a great face. Really total. I mean, I'm amazed he didn't become a bigger star considering how handsome he was.
Oh, wow. I have a nice picture of him with a coffee cup and a mustache.
Oh, okay.
There he is.
Class of 84 is a Canadian movie that he's in, and it was shot here, and Elva was in it. She has one scene in it. Actually, she had more scenes that got cut because she was telling me about. But anyway, I sent her a photo of her from this movie. I'm like, how could you not tell me up until now that you were in a movie with Perry King? Did you have an affair with him? Was he nice? And she's like, what movie is that from? Because she worked a lot in the 80s. She's like, what movie is that? And I had to explain to her. She's like, who's Perry King? I'm like, you were on a set with this man. How do you not remember?
I'm looking at it. Class of 1984.
Oh my God. I got to watch this. Class of 84.
It's the movie Michael J. Fox made before he got onto Family Ties.
Michael Fox.
Yeah, you can clearly see that the Family Ties production made him lose a lot of weight.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Oh interesting. Oh, is man. This the one
one where they all, a lot of them got Parkinson's? I guess not.
I don't think so.
No. He shot something before Family Ties, and then they went back, and years later, many of them had gotten Parkinson's.
Oh, I didn't know. Really, I didn't know.
Al Waxman was in this.
Yeah. It's a total Toronto production. Oh, yeah. Anyway, go on, Marco.
I'm going to go on because otherwise we're going to go down the Michael J. Fox Parkinson.
You have to do a French one. And I love when this happens. Yeah. All right.
Okay, here we go. This is epic.
Yeah. Well, love him or hate him, another filmmaker with a high reputation internationally, Jacques Audiard, had family members in the film business, including his screenwriter father, and refused to follow suit, announcing that he would become a teacher. After studying literature and philosophy at the Sorbonne, he didn't finish his degree, at which point he followed his girlfriend's suggestion to take a course as a trainee film editor, which resulted in his entering filmmaking anyway, folks. He had his first major success with his fourth feature, The Beat That My Heart Skipped, starring Romain Duris in 2005. His next film, A Prophet, in 2009, won second place at Cannes and was nominated for an Oscar and is still his most celebrated work. In 2015, his film Défunt won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and he followed it with a breakthrough in Hollywood cinema with the 2018 film The Sister's Brother. He was born on this day in Paris, or Paris, however you like to say it.
Oh, God, say that right.
In 1952.
The Sisters Brothers is another one of those butterflies or free fake sounding movies.
No, it's apparently it's really good. I've never seen it.
I'm shocked. I've never heard you say I've never seen it.
Oh, there's a lot. Especially as time, as time goes on with newer movies, it's harder to keep up. But when I was in my 20s, I spent all my time watching movies. Thankfully, I got a life later. And so, you know, it got more complicated. Anyway, Sandra Hüller received acclaim for her second film performance as the star of Requiem, the film about the religiously oppressed young woman whose experience was later fictionalized into the horror film The Exorcism of Emily Rose. It earned her the Best Actress Prize at the Berlin Film Festival. She later starred in the films A Woman in Berlin, The Architect, and in 2014 had a supporting role in Jessica Hausner's masterful film Amour Fou. A graduate of the Ernst Busch Acting Academy, she starred in the best film of 2016, Tony Erdmann, and won the European Film Award for Best Actress that year. Since then, she has appeared in Sybil, Sleep, and I'm Your Man. She was born on this day in Suhl, East Germany, in 1978.
And Bill, if you ever are able to go to the cinema again, and there's a horror film that you want to see, take Amanda with you, because I didn't know this about my wife until we went to go see The Haunting.
A Haunting in Connecticut.
A Haunting in Connecticut, which isn't even a scary film.
No, it's terrifying because it's real.
And she was sitting next to me. She screamed so loud that the person in front of me shook the popcorn out of his hand. And you know, in movies when you see popcorn fly, it flew out of his hand. She screamed so loud and I turned to him like, you've got to stop.
My absolute favorite kind of person to go see a horror movie with. My friend April was like that. She would scream so loud, like she would actually jump out of her seat and hit the ceiling. And then sometimes the audience would laugh and she would good-naturedly laugh with them because she would scream so loud. But it helped get me in the movie. I loved it.
No, Amanda screams so loud that she scares other people.
Which helps people get
in
the movie.
No, I'm so embarrassed.
And Marco gets so embarrassed that now he spends most of a horror movie doing this. Nobody can see it but Bill, but doing this.
Pretending that he doesn't know you.
Yeah, he's trying to like gauge my reaction so he steals glances.
And I also
like,
say
get a screen at this, which really pulls me out of the film because I'm really engaged in the moment, and then I have this person kind of peeking.
I do
over
that to my sister because my sister cries at everything, and sometimes I stare at her because I'm like, let's see if this is shameless enough to make her cry. And I look over, I'm like, yep, there it is.
He does it to me for crying too.
Yeah, you cry.
He does it to me for all emotions.
She cried when she got her vaccine today.
If you don't, you're a monster.
Okay.
I love crying at the movies. I find it very cathartic. All right, so we have our very, very last of all time birthday celebrant coming up, which Amanda, you're going to read, and it's one of my favorites, and a real feminist hero. And a real hero of mine from when I was a teenager.
Let's all read it together, word by word.
No.
One word at a time.
No.
Listen, she
pronounce the P's in Hubert.
Oh, God.
She's a genius filmmaker. She's a great one to end this entire year with. I agree. One of the great geniuses of filmmaking in the last few decades. We're talking about Jane Campion, who also broke through barriers when her 1993 film, The Piano, Mommy, The Piano, made her the first and still only woman to ever win the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, and made her the second woman to ever be nominated for an Oscar for Best Director. She studied anthropology at Victoria University of Wellington, painting at Sydney College of the Arts, and then finally filmmaking at the Australian School of Film before beginning to make short films in the early 80s. Her first film, Peel, winning the Palme d'Or, winning the Palme d'Or for short films at Cannes. She achieved acclaim with her first feature, Sweetie, in 1989. She followed it with her masterpiece, An Angel at My Table. Again, one of those titles of a movie that I don't know is real. And after The Piano, made The Portrait of a Lady, Holy Smoke, In the Cut, and Bright Star in 2009. She has not made a feature since, but she's wrote and directed the miniseries Top of the Lake. She's currently in post-production on her next film. She's got a lot more great upper sleeve. Bill, tell us about the fan letter that you wrote.
I wrote her a really long, cheesy fan letter when I was 16, and I got a response that I still have in my drawer from her office, from her assistant, saying that Jane was on pre-production of her next film and was not able to respond directly, but wanted to let you know how much she appreciated your kind words and thanked me for my letter. A handwritten letter. I wrote her a handwritten letter.
Oh, that's really so sweet. Wonderful. Yeah. What film was she working on in pre-production that she couldn't answer you?
The Portrait of a Lady.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Well,
looking forward to, Bill, I look forward to a day where I go see the next Jane Campion movie by your side. If you'll let me.
Thank you.
Because I know you have a lot of people that have that seat. So
you got to reserve a seat next to Bill when you go see a movie.
Especially post-pandemic. Oh, there's going to be a long lineup.
If it's TIFF, Bill takes it serious. Do not expect an invitation.
Well, I'm not going to do TIFF with him.
No, you can't do that. No, you can't.
I'm not doing that.
No, but that's
well,
that's,
first
that's
of all, to cap off Jane Campion, she was born on this day in Wellington, New Zealand in 1954. Second of all, I'm not too high maintenance to sit next to at a movie.
He's a monster.
So long as you're quiet.
Because I'm very longer quiet. Longer than the vaccine line.
Yeah. For me, of deal breaker.
Oh, you don't like talking? You don't want me to talk like the middle-aged woman that I'm.
There's
that
a certain level of talking I will withstand, but it depends on the movie. At TIFF, I don't need to shush you because at TIFF you are surrounded by movie watching professionals, and the minute you make even a peep, someone like three rows back will do what Michelle Collins calls her go-go gadget arms, where they like reach all the way down and tap you on the shoulder and are like, "Excuse me, could you please be quiet?" For me, the deal breaker at TIFF is if you are late or a no-show, because I've had people do that. And you know how hard TIFF tickets are to come by and how expensive they are. And I've had people cancel on me 20 minutes before the show.
No, you can't.
Those people have not been invited again.
No, don't.
I do most of my TIFF watching by who do I know is working? Call me at the last minute when you have tickets. And then I show up to that.
You know, I've actually done that more and more in the last few years because I have been fortunate enough to meet enough people who do that. So I don't bust out the big bucks like I did when I was younger. I also don't have the energy to do 25 movies in a week the way I did when I was younger. But that's okay. As long as you go at least once and enjoy the experience being there, it's fine. You know, I don't have to be there for all of it.
I will say this is a wholly different topic, but I have done a similar thing where I juried for The Fringe, and that I love seeing four or five plays a day and just committing, you know, 5 days a week or whatever to play watching. That to me, I will do.
Yeah, but those are 1 hour plays. And also when you have that, level of access, you basically walk in, you watch the show, and you walk out. The thing that's tiring about TIFF is not the movies. I don't get sick of the movies. I get sick of standing in a lineup for 2 hours before the movie just to get in and listening to people in the lineups talking my ear off. And like the whole process of it is exhausting. Some years the weather is really hot and you're waiting out in the sweltering sun. Other years you're waiting out in the pouring rain. That aspect of it is what's tiring, not the actual movie watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been to any other film festivals elsewhere in the world?
Not in the world. No, we have many of them in Toronto, and I've been to a bunch of other ones, but not.
I can't believe you've never been to Cannes.
I know.
Festival or the city. So we need to go to Cannes is what we need to do.
I guess so. I mean, if you go there during the festival, I don't know what you can get access to without already knowing someone, because it's purely an industry festival. It's not there's no public tickets for that festival. And then, of course, the rest of the year, that town is dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There's it's not like there's a million theaters everywhere. No, no, no. It's the theater, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
But, well, then we just go. I mean, it's dead, like south of France is dead, in that it's filled with people on the beach. But,
and I'm sure if you go during the festival, I don't think there's anything to stop us from booking a room, but the availability is probably tight, and the prices probably go up 5 times.
Well, and it's teensy. It's not like Toronto where you have a big city.
All right. I get it. So you guys are not going to Cannes.
No, we'll go to Cannes. We'll go to the beach. We'll get rocks in our bathing suits, because all those beads are just tiny rocks.
We'll get discovered.
And then we'll hop on the train and keep on going until we hit Spain. It's already been decided.
Okay.
And you can we'll catch you in Portugal, Marco.
Fair enough. Listen, never been. I'm happy to meet you there.
I love you both in very different ways.
Yeah.
Or not. Who knows? But I just want to say it's been quite a journey.
It has been fun.
And, you know, listen, it's going to be Wednesday night, and we're going to be like, oh, we don't have to record a podcast. But I don't know. I just wanted to say, I don't have any big, amazing speech to say.
Marco's so happy that after Friday, he's no longer going to get emails from me saying, why isn't the episode out?
I'm so sorry to our listeners. When episodes didn't go up on time or things happened, that was not Bill, that was me, and just trying to deal with.
I know what I want to say. I hope we've created something, because it is a full circle. It's not like it's done.
Right.
It's a circle. So I hope, and who knows, maybe we can do little add-ons in the future.
Right.
But in any event, I hope we've created something that is something that people end up sending for birthdays. Do support in any way they want to, whether it's just promoting it or otherwise.
Sure.
Send us money, we'll take it. But you know, and that we raise more money for Marvin's, and that it becomes a thing that people catch on to more and more as time grows. You know, it's an existing piece of art that we've created.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. I'm Marco Timpano.
I'm Bill Antoniou.
And I'm the best one, Amanda Barker. Not true. Not true. I don't like
and
that.
I am
Mulligan.
The girl.
Edit it. Edit it. I'm going to clap and you're going to edit it. I'm the girl. I'm the girl one. I love you both. Thank you both so
the
much.
The sun has gone to bed and so must I. So long. Farewell. Auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Hear it, goodbye.
And everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.